Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hi, welcome to today's Connecting Faith. I always appreciate the opportunity to get together with you and look forward to a good hour ahead today. I'm Neil Stavem, Ted Ross at the controls, Carissa's at the phones. Looking forward to connecting with our guest today, who Ted is one of us. Grew up in Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah, that's true, I did.
Automatically, whatever he says is just going to have more weight and impact. So, looking forward to next week, of course, Palm Sunday, and then the Holy Week. Got some great programs, including a visit with John Dixon, who's from Australia and has written a great book. I think he calls it The Doubter's Guide to the Bible for Believers and Skeptics. And it's a good time to, you know, people are a little more interested in spiritual things, so we'll get some wonderful perspective from John. Looking forward to having him back on. Also, Dr. Michael Rudelnik is coming back with us next Thursday. We're going to talk a little bit about Passover and the Seder, of course, Monday, Thursday, next Thursday. So what did the Last Supper look like? Did Da Vinci have it right in his his portrait? Suggesting probably not.
So everybody get on that side of the table.
Sure, that's right. Yeah, sure, that's pretty much how we eat at our house. So we're looking forward to that. Hope that you can be a part of listening in. And, of course, you can always hear programs if you miss them. We keep the audio interviews posted online. They're podcasts, and they're available. They're pretty easy just to, if you're not familiar a lot with the computer, you can just go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page, and there's an archive of all the interviews from past, and we'll put today's up as well. And so just click on a listen and pass them on to a friend, too. Let's get to today's topic, because we're going to cover the world today.
Just biting off a lot.
Yeah, well, like I said, our guests are from Wisconsin.
Yeah, you can handle it.
That's right. The book we're going to talk about, it's new, just out. It's called Possible, and the subtitle is A Blueprint for Changing How We Change the World. And Stephen Bauman is our guest today. He's president and CEO of World Relief. That's a church-based international relief and development agency. And Bauman oversees programs in health, economics, agriculture, and refugee assistance in 20 countries. He's worked with international relief organizations for over 20 years, and he's an ordained minister and has degrees from Johns Hopkins, Wheaton, and the University of Wisconsin, and we're honored to have him on with us. So, Stephen, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Greetings, Neil. Greetings, Ted. Great to be with you, two fellow Midwesterners, so thank you.
We're looking forward to jumping into the blueprint for how we can change the world, or changing the way we change the world. But maybe, as a CEO of World Relief, which is a marvelous ministry, a humanitarian aid organization, let's start with maybe a little world report. Give us a sense of, we've heard reports, not too long ago that that we're actually maybe making some progress in the area of global poverty. But give us a sense of what's happening in the fight against poverty, oppression, and injustice.
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you, Neil. We watch the news in the evenings or read the newspaper, and it's often daunting and overwhelming, whether it's terrorism or war or trafficking. But in the midst of all it, there are some really good things happening. You mentioned global poverty. In the last 20, 25 years, poverty has been cut in half around the world, and there's some amazing stories there. Some of that's economic growth and development, but a lot of that is also, really great people on the front lines solving the problems of poverty, and not just fixing them for 1 year or 1 month or 1 day, but in a way that lasts and is sustainable. Another example would be kids under age 5 that die from what Bono calls stupid poverty. It's dehydration, it's malaria, it's malnutrition, things that we know how to fix. That's why he calls it stupid. Well, the kids that die each day has been cut in half as well. It's about 20,000 kids a day that die every day, which is a daunting, overwhelming statistic. It should infuriate us. It does. But at the same time, it was 40,000 kids just 25, 26 years ago. So some good progress there. And a lot of people that are contributing to the solutions are people just like you and I that are following Jesus and trying to put our faith into action.
Are there areas maybe where things are going better, or maybe where is there areas where there's the greatest need? I guess as you look at what comes across your desk, what seems to get the highest priority?
Things that are going well, countries like Malawi or parts of Kenya, Rwanda, stable countries that have found a way to hold back the tides of violence or war. There's some great progress there. Even some of the places that we notoriously think of as terrible places, like the Congo, which is still pretty dangerous place, particularly the eastern part. But even in the midst of that conflict, we're seeing some great progress on poverty and nutrition and so forth, even on peace building. But other countries, obviously Syria, Iraq now, where people are being displaced because of ISIS. Where there's war, where there's conflict, those are the places that are the most urgent. And generally that begins a process, a cycle of sort of disruption and displacement and leads to all sorts of poverty that takes sometimes 10, 15 years, 20 years to rebuild. So we have an eye on those places in the world as we also celebrate some of the other countries and nations where there's been great progress.
You know, as the CEO of World Relief, how do you determine where to focus your attention and resources? Is it reactionary, or can you be proactive?
Yeah, great question. It is in part reactionary. So the most vulnerable places in the world, like I said, where there's war or where there's conflict, we tend to focus there. That's what we've always been focused for 70 years. But at the same time, you mentioned being proactive. We do a lot of work on the proactive side and preventing problems from happening. For example, we often think of earthquakes and tropical storms, or we might remember the earthquake in Haiti or some of the earthquakes in Asia. Well, there's a lot you can do in a community to prevent the impact of, for example, an earthquake. And country like Indonesia, where they have earthquakes all the time, we work with communities there, very rural communities, and we help them to prepare. So it's called disaster risk reduction. And often the people that are doing that are local churches. It's not rocket science to do some basic preparation to be more resilient to disasters. So there's a lot you can do on the prevention side, the proactive side, and the solutions, the heroes of those programs, of those initiatives, are the people right there that we often consider victims. They can actually find ways to solve their own problems, prevent sort of the impact of disaster, even the impact of a downturn in the weather that would cause a drought that would affect their food. There's ways to become more resilient to that and prevent hunger or poverty. So there's some great things there.
It's interesting you said it's not rocket science. I was just thinking some time ago, I visited with Rich Stearns from World Vision, another relief and development organization, and he said, in some ways, some of these big issues really are rocket science. They're complex, but I think as you have suggested in your book, solutions are available and impact can be had even if we're not rocket scientists.
Yeah, it's a paradox. On one hand, solving access to food or food security is what it's called in countries that are prone to drought or very rural and far from local markets. That's tough work. That's hard to do. So Rich is right. It's not easy. But at the same time, when you commit to it and you look at a desert, I've got friends who are farmers right across the country, across the Midwest from Wisconsin, that can look at desert land and say, hey, we can grow food here. Here's how you do it. It takes commitment, takes passion and the right people, and especially the right farmers to work with the local farmers there and building capacity. And once you invest in that way, take one thing and go after it for a number of years, what seems impossible actually becomes not only possible but a solution that can help people help themselves for the long term.
And we're going to talk more about that in a moment as we unpack Stephen Bauman's new book, Possible, A Blueprint for Changing How We Change the World. Stephen Bauman is president and CEO of World Relief. It's a humanitarian aid organization. It's been around for, as he said, 70 years, doing great work around the globe, and we'll hear more about it. We've got some copies of the book to give away, and this would be Really a great resource if perhaps your church group say, we want to be involved in engaging in global poverty or injustice or fighting oppression. And how do we go about doing it? Well, this provides some really hands-on tools to do that. So if you'd like to sign up for a copy, as we do each day, we do a drawing at the end of the hour, and just select some names from those who have called. And love to have you join the conversation as well. Maybe you've been involved in working with World Relief at some level. Love to have you just chime in, or you have a question about how work can be done. If you could save the world, would you? And how would you do that? You have some questions along those lines? Jump in. 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH. We'll talk more with Stephen Bowen in a moment.
Give me your eyes for just 1 second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach. Give me your heart for the ones forgotten. Give me your eyes so I can see. Yeah.
Sometimes a song can just summarize what we're talking about, and that's a good example. Give me your eyes, Brandon Heath. They're talking today with Stephen Bowman, CEO of World Relief, about his new book, Possible, A Blueprint for Changing How We Change the World. You know, across the world, there are people just like us rising up, say, we want to be in the fight against poverty and oppression and injustice. And they're not just professionals, but average folks. And we're finding out how that can work. And Stephen, I guess I'm curious to know, because NAE, you're part of the National Association of Evangelicals, so you're working with churches all the way along. And I'm wondering if we have sort of that 80-20 principle when it comes to dealing with the fight for poverty and injustice, if, you know, 20% of the people are engaged in the fight, or maybe it's even less than that.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the evangelical church has come so far and in many ways is on the front lines of fighting injustice or issues. And years ago, 50, 60 years ago, there was a big debate over the social gospel and whether it was the right thing to do, whether it compromised our faith. And we've come through that, and we've decided, no, Jesus wants us to follow him in serving, you know, those who are on the front lines of poverty, the least of these, as it were. So the evangelical church is really a leader now, I think, many would say, across the world. But it's been debated in our history, and there are some churches and some people that are still worried about it, really convinced that maybe we shouldn't worry so much about injustice or social justice. But when you take a read of the Bible and look at the over 2,000 verses, I mean, it's almost impossible to confront the Bible and God's word and what Jesus says without really taking a hard look at the vulnerable and those who are marginalized. So we continually see an increase in people who are engaged, deeply engaged with their faith in all sorts of issues, not just across the world, but in their neighborhoods. To your question, it probably is. My experience is it is the 80-20 rule, probably less than 20%, but that number continues to grow, and I think it's a really exciting day to be alive to see how many people are joining in with their gifts as they are, where they are, whether that's as an artist, as a communicator, as a blogger, as a technician, most not quitting their day jobs, as it were, but applying their skills, their passions, their hobbies to an issue that they take on, whether it's global hunger or trafficking or neighborhood violence or peace in a particular country. So it's a very different world than it used to be, almost to the point where we are left without excuse to not join in and do something.
Did you write the book Possible because maybe something's being left out in the fight against oppression or injustice? I mean, are we doing something where we're coming up short?
Yeah, we are. I mean, we make progress in certain things and we fall back. And I wrote the book for this very simple reason. I get the question all the time when I talk about, you know, Sudan, or I talk about Iraq today, or even places that are, you know, underappreciated, like Niger, where it's one of the poorest countries in the world and has been that way for so long. And I tell stories of real people in hardship, And I get the question, what can I do? You know, what can I do? I'm moved by this. I didn't know that moms in even Haiti, it's only an hour from Florida, they sometimes have to wake up and choose which child to feed. And to me, that's just unbelievable. I can't even comprehend that, people will say to me. What can I do? And it's often after a talk or a sermon. And answering that question in 5 minutes is a really hard thing to do. And this book seeks to answer that question. And it not only says what we can do as we are, who we are, and it not only says how we should do it. We got to look deeper on these issues to Rich Stern's thought about it's complex. It is complex, but that shouldn't overwhelm us or paralyze us. But the third thing it also does, it says this. It says who we must become. And we have to change in order to bring change. And that's something that is very important. It's right in the heart and the middle of discipleship. And so we often go to church and we think about, gosh, how can I grow and how can I become more like Christ? Or we go to books about spiritual formation, and all that stuff is great. Well, the intersection of spiritual formation and discipleship and justice is what's happening in a big way in the churches around the world. And this book seeks to speak to that. And hopefully, if people who read it, and most people who read it that I've talked to, almost all, would say, you know what, I'm inspired, I'm encouraged, I don't feel hopeless. And lots of people are jumping into the book and working through some of the exercises in the back of the book to help find and recover and discover their own calling, their own hobbies and passions, their own wisdom, their own networks, and what they can actually do on some of the major issues around the world.
You mentioned calling. Let's talk a little bit about that, because we've maybe misunderstood calling, or maybe there's a new way we can look at that. Expand on that a bit.
Yeah. Calling, we use calling in probably several different ways. We think of it as something we all kind of secretly may aspire to. God, maybe you're calling me to something. Or we use it in a pejorative way when somebody's struggling in a role or a position and we say, oh, we think maybe they missed their calling. But the idea of calling often gets relegated to clergy or someone who does ministry, and we separate the world of ministry or church from, the everyday work world, which involves meetings and people and planning and maybe your hands and as a journeyman or as a mom moms have the hardest job in the world and the most important one, or teachers like my wife teaching kids. So we tend to split calling as something that's spiritual, and the rest of us are not called because we're called to do more mundane things. Well, that's not biblical. That's not what God said. And that's been recovered throughout history, way back to the Reformation, 16th century, but we're still struggling to live that out. So everyone is called. Everyone is invited to follow Jesus in a unique calling. Now, it's ours to choose to pick that up, to respond to God. And then when we say yes, what do we do? How do we discover that? Is it a mystical experience? We're familiar with Moses in the Bible, and it's like a bush on fire. I mean, that's that's pretty radical. Or Mary in the New Testament, there's an angel, and wow, they're called. And I've never had an experience like that, we would all say. So therefore, are we not called? But we forget about, Barnabas in the Bible, or Lydia, or all these other people in the Bible that did extraordinary things, but there wasn't a recorded mystical experience. And so I would suggest that all of us are called, and for the vast majority of us, it's discovered over time, very practically, by looking at what God's put in our lives, who He's put in our lives, and what we're passionate about. And intersecting those things, our passion, our wisdom, and our personal network, our friendships, Blend and I have discovered amazing things by just doing that. And it becomes more like a pathway, a journey, like when you put a tablecloth on the table and you unfold it a square at a time. That's a calling over time that I find most people discover. It's an exciting journey, and it's something that none of us should give up hope or lose sight of. And it's fun. I've seen people who live their whole lives only to meet a family from Uganda, for example, up in Minneapolis. A friend of mine met a woman from Uganda that was able to come to the United States because she was in actually in a very difficult situation with Joseph Kony's army and taken as a captive. And she was given a visa to come to the United States to start a new life. And these friends of mine met her. They were at church all their lives. And they were actually asking this question, God, is there something more? We find ourselves going to one of the best churches in Minneapolis, Wooddale Church. What a great church. And we just desire something more. They prayed for 30 days, and on the 29th day, they met through this incredible circumstance. They met this woman named Harriet from Uganda. Their lives have never been the same since. And they would say, God called us to her, and we were able to help her and help get her kids over to the United States and help her with a number of practical things. But my friends would say, Harriet helped them more than we helped. Harriet helped us more than we helped her. And in the midst of that question, that prayer, they've received a calling that has profoundly changed them. It's just exciting.
Back to you. You address it, something called a beautiful collision. Maybe just to take a minute to talk about, you know, what that means, and you know, we'll spend some time talking more of the stories about those happenings.
Yeah, I use that word, and it's a phrase from artist David Crowder. I think he sings a song using that language. It's not a song about the concept as I'm using it, but it's a wonderful song. And we often think of going to church and we hear a sermon and it goes into us and sort of plants a seed that grows into a full-blown tree and brings life to the world. And that's a wonderful way God changes us. But I think we all know that sometimes the way God changes us most is when we confront something that's either a moment of struggle or suffering or maybe surprise. You know, my friends, I just told that story about Minneapolis. The way they met Harriet after praying for 30 days is Terry, came out to the street one day to get the mail. Her mailbox was gone. It was obliterated. It was pieces everywhere all over the street. And she called the police and said, oh, my gosh, somebody's hit my mailbox. Or police came over and looked at the mailbox with her, and Terry thought somebody blew it up. And no, this isn't a pipe bomb or anything that looks like terrorism, or somebody hit your mailbox with a car. And she said, here's how I can tell, because the pieces of your mailbox go right over to the neighbor's house up the driveway underneath the garage. Oh my, she said. And she said, can you go check it out? She did. She thought it was a teenager or something coming home late at night, maybe drinking or something like that. Well, she turns out it was a lady named Harriet from Uganda who was just learning how to drive. She had come to the United States, had gotten a job to be sort of a live-in help to an elderly couple. And, you know, Harriet and Tim and Terry began to talk, and their whole lives were changed, as I was mentioning before. Now, that's a beautiful collision. Who would think that your mailbox getting taken out actually led to a whole life change?
Well, Stephen, we're going to jump in. We've got a hard break coming up here, but we want to pick up more of the story coming up in the second half here as we talk with Stephen Bauman, CEO and President of World Relief. We're talking about Possible, Blueprint for Changing How We Change the World. Thanks for tuning in.
What if the armies of the Lord picked up and dusted off their swords, vowed to set the captive free, and not let Satan have one more? What if the church, for heaven's sake, finally stepped up to the plate, took a stand upon God's promise, and stormed hell's rusty gates? What if his people prayed?
Good word from Casting Crowns. Good question. Well, there are men and women all across the globe who are willing and ready to make a difference. And the question we're asking, is there a better way to fight poverty, oppression, and injustice? Stephen Bauman has been leading World Relief. It's a church-based international relief and development agency for several years. And he's written a new book called Possible, A Blueprint for Changing How We Change the World. And we've got some copies of it to give away. I'd love to have you join the broadcast. Sign up for a copy or join us with a question, 877-933-2484. Stephen, we were just talking a little bit about a beautiful collision here before the break, and I don't know if there's more you want to add to that. Otherwise, we'll get to a couple of our questions.
Yeah, just maybe one thought on that. And beautiful collision is something surprising we didn't know about that may upset us, or something radically, have you ever met a person? I'm sure our listeners have met a person that so surprised you with their gift of grace or love. That's also a beautiful collision. And I meet those people all the time in the least likely places of the world. We tend to go into a country that's suffering, Iraq right now, or Syria, or lesser known countries like Malawi or Mozambique. And I expect to see gaping need, and I often do. I see firsthand poverty and suffering, but often those same people have the strongest faith. And some of those same people have the deepest joy. And that surprises me. It's a beautiful collision. I think, wait a minute, something is here. God is doing something in the midst of this. And they become teachers to me as we and others, my colleagues, help build their capacity to overcome their suffering. There's a beautiful collision there that is exciting. And you don't have to travel like me to Malawi to encounter that. You can encounter it through the stories of those people. World Belief is an example of my organization, but many other organizations that are telling those stories and helping us to encounter those people firsthand. That's a beautiful collision. God's doing something, calling us. In those collisions, God's calling us to take our faith outside the church into our everyday lives, into our thoughts, our actions, our emotions, our prayers, our giving, to help those people who are on the front lines of suffering, as I say.
It was interesting, as I read your book, there was so much talk about, even as you mentioned earlier, passion, wisdom, and sort of community or network. So much talk about relationship. I think somehow we think about, well, we will give, we'll provide resources, but it's really about relationship where change takes place, isn't it?
Yeah, resources and giving. Often people look at charity or organizations asking for money, and maybe we get a little tired of that. We get fatigued, and that's natural. And here's why. Money and giving and resourcing should follow our passion and follow our relationships. If we're engaged in something, it will be very natural and normal to give. Money follows mission, as it were, as somebody said. So in the book, people ask all the time, what can I do? How can I get involved in, the mom that you talked about who's struggling to feed her child? What I often ask people is I ask them questions about where they are now. Who are your friends? What kind of friends are talking to you about suffering in the world or suffering in the neighborhood? I talk about their experience. Where have you been? What have you studied? Oh, you studied, nursing, or you've studied graphic arts. Oh, you love social media. You're on Facebook. Oh, if you're on Facebook or Twitter, here's a thing. You can follow, all sorts of people who are working on specific issues, whether it's, finding solutions to water or overcoming trafficking. You can go to websites and find people. So it becomes a network of it becomes a conversation around people you already know or people that you should know. So the first place to start is, what am I passionate about? Or what shocks me? What makes me lament? There's a section in the book about writing our own laments. What makes us grieve when we think about the world? And we often, as Americans, kind of want to steer clear of that. It doesn't feel good. But often in the place where we're grieving or we're shocked is actually where God's speaking to us. And to take that shock or that surprise or that grief and write it down and say, God, I'm willing to help in this area, and I believe that you're a God big enough to fix these problems. It's all throughout the Bible. It's the story of our faith. So the place of lament and grief is a great place to start. Then start asking the questions, who do I know? What am I passionate about? What can I bring to the table? And not ruling out anybody, from the artist, the musician, the mom, the architect, straight through to the writer, the creator, creative type people. So that's what the book is about, is to start where you are and to go through a process of asking some hard questions and let God surprise you as to where he will take you.
We'll get back to more of some of those great strategies. The Blueprint for Changing How We Change the World, that's the subtitle of Stephen Bowen's book, Possible. Stephen is the CEO and president of World Relief, And Tammy, calling in from Sioux Falls, had a question. She says, what are some ways that I could get involved and extend resources to the island of Vanuatu? That just, of course, what, last couple weeks, major devastation there. That's a prime front page example.
Yeah, that's a great question, Vanuatu. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it correctly either.
I'd have no idea.
I know that it's a beautiful place. It's a tropical place, but I also know it's a place where people have suffered. They've had a disaster there. So I've got a friend who leads an organization called Nazarene Compassionate Ministries. So if you Google that, Nazarene Compassionate Ministries, you'll find some folks that are working there. And the reason why they're working there is because they've got some friends who are leading churches there. And so there'll be something, might be something very practical there, not only giving, but something very practical that you can help with. And always remember, at a minimum, we can all tell the story. We can tell the story at our lunch tables across the cubicle. We can tell the story through Facebook. And so much of what we need today is just people to tell the story so that more people get involved. And as we tell the story, our passion starts to rise in us. And then we meet other people, and then we might find ourselves with some amazing stories of how we can actually practically help. So in terms of Vanuatu, Nazarene Compassion Ministries, they're good folks, good friends to us, good friends to our belief.
Rachel in Mapleton asks, if I want to learn how to help where there's a need for food, water, et cetera, besides monetary, what would be some suggestions?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'd say first, Rachel, start with the things that you already have. Who are you? What's your skill set? What's your passion? Where have you studied? And then ask this question: what's happening right there in your local town? Is there a food bank or a food kitchen? Are there people helping out with the homeless issue in your hometown? That's a great way to start. And the third thing I would say is to start thinking about organizations like World Belief. You can go to our website. You can find out parts of the world where we're struggling with food or water. And just start reading and then sign up for Twitter feeds if you're into social media, or go to a Facebook page. And start becoming the recipient of the conversation. And then you'll find yourself joining into the conversation. So there's so much out there. The best place is just to start. Start Googling, start following a couple people on Twitter or Facebook, and you'll be surprised, you know, how much there is. Then the next thing will probably be to say, to take maybe 30 days and say, God, what is the one thing you want me to focus on? And pray through and ask yourself one country, one place, one neighborhood, one demographic. It might be moms. It might be kids. And focus on the one thing, and then sort of shift the people you're following on Twitter and Facebook. Find those friends that are curious about the same thing, and then give yourself, 5 years to that, and think about it, and maybe travel, maybe meet people, and you'll be surprised where God leads you in terms of things you can do other than just giving.
You know, I was interested as you talk in the book Possible, A Blueprint for Changing How We Change the World. You talk about how change begins. Yep, and often starts in the periphery, not the center. Talk a little bit about what that means, for us average folk. I mean, somehow we think, well, this has to be, you're a CEO of World Relief. Sure, you can, you can implement change, but we're just average folks.
Yeah, I think it's a very important principle right across the business world, culture in general. I think we definitely see it in the Bible, where change came from, the backwater of Israel, which is called Galilee. And no one expected, the world to be turned upside down by an uneducated preacher called Jesus. So that principle of change from the periphery is it's a pretty well-established principle. And what I find is that the most important change is often created, or the ideas or the solutions are sort of discovered right there where they're needed most. We tend to go abroad, and we see on television people living in communities or in slums or difficult places, living under a dollar a day. It's tempting to see those people as, without capacity to help their families overcome poverty. Well, actually, the opposite is true. In very rare cases is a person absolutely helpless or a victim, maybe in a fire or a at the epicenter of an earthquake. But even then, I went down to Haiti the day after the earthquake, and I found pastors and churches had organized families right across their church, were taking people in from the community, and all they needed, I mean, they had organized everybody, they were distributing food, all they needed was a supply chain for food, which we helped establish from the Dominican Republic. And those pastors and their people were the sort of the heroes in serving, you know, thousands of people in an earthquake. So periphery, the change, you know, a mother who's out in the rural parts of Africa and she's struggling with nutrition for her kids, when she discovers that she can grow peanuts, you know, they call them groundnuts, and if she were, you know, with a few seeds that are, you know, just a few pennies often, she can grow groundnuts, and that can strengthen the diet of a child, bringing in some protein so that her children don't stunt and so that they have a lifetime of learning that we wish for all kids, and that's not, you know, compromised because of nutrition. You've got a solution right there in a village with a few seeds. That's a great example, even a metaphor for how change happens. It's often from the edge. It's often there is God working already, and we need to show up either in prayer or thought, or some of us need to go and help sort of midwife that solution, that capacity, so that that mom can be the solution long term for her kids, that mom can teach her friends, and her friends can teach their friends, and suddenly it looks more like a movement of change rather than charity per se. Those are really exciting things that we do every day at World Belief and others do, and it really changes the mindset of how to really overcome some of these great social evils.
I was thinking about, you know, folks sort of on the periphery or just average people. Yesterday was the anniversary of the birth of Norman Borlaug, who was, of course, received the Nobel Peace Prize, but it was in his development. He was a farm boy from Iowa, came to the University of Minnesota, and developed a wheat that was, what, resistant to drought. I mean, and actually, you know, impacted millions, really.
Mm, yeah, some people say that Norman Borlaug, through his work, saved a billion lives. Mm. That's staggering. And here's a kid who, actually in his early days, didn't do so well at school and couldn't get into the main part of University of Minnesota, so he went to a different place. And then he started to thrive. Two things happened in his life. One is he found himself in service to people who were struggling with hunger from the Depression. This is way back when there was a Depression. People didn't have enough food to eat right here in this country, and they were starving. So he saw starvation firsthand, and he said, it deeply moved me. He's never forgotten it. I think his words, it left scars on me. So there's this lament, that beautiful collision right there. Boom, Norman Borlaug. So he goes and sits in on a lecture at the University of Minnesota about, as you said, you know, wheat varieties and dwarf wheat and how to, et cetera. So he then goes on to get a PhD. He goes after one thing. I mean, a very arcane thing that we would never think of is related to social justice probably today even. And maybe he wasn't thinking it back then, but something moved him when he saw that person starving. And then he went to this lecture. He gets a PhD. And just about that time, massive droughts in India and before that in Mexico. And so as a PhD in science, plant science, he develops a variety of wheat that can resist drought. And through that process staves off a massive famine in India, and a billion lives are saved. Wow. That is extraordinary. A Midwest farmer who would never have dreamed of doing that just does the next thing. He laments about something, and he does what he probably has a passion to do and pursues the one thing his whole life, and you know, God allows him to save a billion lives. That's just an extraordinary story.
Passion, wisdom, the fellowship of friends, and visions, one of the other pieces. We're going to talk about that in a moment with Stephen Bowen, because as you address, sometimes we can have a birth of a vision, but there are some steps after that that aren't always so pleasant, and we'll get to that in a moment as we talk with Stephen Bowman, CEO and President of World Relief. It's a church-based international relief and development agency. Stephen's written a brand-new book called Possible, the Blueprint for Changing How We Change the World. We've got some copies to give away. We do a drawing here at the end of the show and love to have you sign up for that or join the conversation. Something you've heard already sparked a thought or two. You're welcome to join us at 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH. Save the world, would you? Across the world, people just like you are rising up to fight poverty, oppression, and injustice. Not just professionals, but everyday folks. People who refuse to accept the world as it is and dare to believe the change is possible. We're talking about it in a great new book from Stephen Bauman called Possible, A Blueprint for Changing How We Change the World. Stephen is the president and CEO of World Relief. It's a relief, international relief development agency, a ministry of the National Association of Evangelicals, 70 years and growing and strong. We're just grateful for the good work that they're doing globally. And Stephen, one of us from Wisconsin, we'll maybe have him tell his story in a minute. But I know in the book you address issues of vision. And sometimes, you know, when you have the vision to start something, there's maybe a step down or two before God really gives you that that the opportunity to make a change.
Yeah, great question. I mean, a lot of people who have passion or vision or an idea, and we struggle with where do we go from there? And often that vision, and I talk about it in the book, that vision sort of emerges out of our passion, our experience, or wisdom, or even our friends, which I call a fellowship of friends. Taking vision into action is a great question, and I propose a mapping tool. How do you take vision and map, move it from ideas into something practical? One of the best things to do when you have an idea, you have a vision, is to do some exploration of what others are already doing, and that could be a Google search. It could be meeting with others. If it's in a neighborhood or a country where you're living, sometimes you need to get out and just find out what's happening out there. I call it community mapping and understanding who's doing what and why and where. And it's amazing what we discover and what we find out when you do that. You find extraordinary people doing extraordinary things. And as you sort of build a map, just write down what people are doing in different areas. Try to put some labels on it. Out of that, then you bring your idea back into that and say, okay, what's perhaps missing? Where could I provide a link from one thing to the other? Maybe I don't need to start a new ministry or a new nonprofit, but maybe my calling is to link these people in this town, my hometown or my church, link them to something that's happening right down the road or across the world in another country. So the calling there is actually a very important one, which is to bring awareness and understanding and to link groups from one to the other so that we're not doubling up or recreating the wheel and so on. And so community mapping is such a wonderful way, and you can do that in a very professional way and really get a whole community together and actually have them talk through where their strengths are and how we can build upon their strengths. And there's a appendix that talks about how to do that and to guide you through that. Or it can be just a mindset. And every day we think about what we can do and how we can bring our passion to the world. And the mindset is simply this: hey, who's doing what? And how can I find out what they're doing? And how can I maybe discover where they're missing something? There's a gap, and how can I bring to bear that gap? That's a great way to take ideas and vision into something practical. Too often we step out. God has called us to do something, whether it's through a beautiful collision we were talking about earlier, or whether it's through an idea or a friend or a college group or the church small group. And too often we do that, and we step out too soon without taking the time in prayer before God, in conversation with others, to see what's already happening. Keeping in mind that Blackaby principle some years ago, which God's already working. He's already doing something generally out on the periphery, on the edge with those people. How do I discover that and define what the Holy Spirit is already doing and then to apply my gifts and strengths into that? Wonderful, wonderful stories on that front from so many people around the world, and it's an exciting thing to step into.
I'm sure that, you know, as you addressed too, there's sometimes when we get a glimpse of, the mountaintop, there's the valley comes maybe before we see a breakthrough, and you probably encounter that as you work with your team all around the globe, that there are setbacks and frustrations in the midst of seeing what could be done.
Yeah, that's a great thing to put your mind around, because when we step out, when we say that prayer, God, I'm willing to do something that I've never considered before. I want to be part of that calling. I say yes to the invitation even before I know exactly what it is. When we make that step, first of all, I think the angels in heaven cheer and applaud and they celebrate. But just after that, often I've seen this so many times. That's why the book's titled A Blueprint, because I'm trying to get at some of the universal blueprints that we all encounter and face. I've seen so many people, including my own story, where you step out into something based on what you believe God has told you, based on what you've discovered about yourself, only to find yourself in a situation where everything's going the other way, opposite. People are challenging. People laugh at you for even considering that idea, that dream. Think of Joseph in the Old Testament. You know, he had this dream, and he was convinced it was from God. And, of course, we know that it was, because we can read the story so many centuries after. Well, he steps out and tells his brothers, and they throw him in a pit, and he gets taken and put in prison, et cetera, et cetera. So I call it in the book a descent. There's this glimpse of calling, this sense of God saying something. We take out, make a commitment, and then immediately a descent. And you see it in the lives of St. Paul when he was found, you know, Jesus ambushed him on the road to Damascus, and immediately thereafter he's blind and he's out in the desert for, I think, upwards of 14 years. So there's this descent, and it's like a descent into the valley on the mountain with a glimpse, down in the valley. And the question is, why? Why would God do that? I thought he's all about helping us change the world. Well, the valley or the descent is the valley of testing, of character shaping, of preparing for climbing back up the mountain and fulfilling that vision. And there's a lot of books written on this. It's great stuff, but it's a pattern that you see all throughout the Bible. You see it in people's lives. So when you have that vision and you say yes, hold on to it and consider the valley and the descent as preparation for something great, and embrace the lessons learned there. And you'll find yourself changed in that valley. You'll find yourself grateful for that valley and prepared and ready then to take what God has given you and take and put it into action for helping people around the world.
I only have a couple minutes left, and I am interested in hearing just a little bit about your story, because you went to the University of Wisconsin, right? How did you end up as the CEO of World Relief? I don't know if you've got do you have the 90-second version of that?
I'll give you the super 90-second version. Least likely people to be doing what we're doing in the University of Wisconsin. Graduated, went into business, Fortune 100. My wife's a teacher. She said, "Stephen, why don't we go take a break and volunteer somewhere?" I said, "How about the local youth group?" She says, "How about Africa?" I say no for 2 years. Third year, I finally say yes, take a leave of absence. We go to Africa. And I'm thinking, you know, going to Africa is for doctors and missionaries, and discover that there's grave suffering there, and that people who are leaders and administrators and strategists like me are actually greatly needed. So we stay for 6 years, and the rest is history, and really call it my second conversion now, the first being to Jesus, the second being to his people who suffer. And I believe all of us are meant to go through that second conversion. It's a little scary, but if we open our hearts to it, we go through that lament and we arise finding ourselves living a life that's extraordinary and surprising and very practically helpful.
WorldRelief.org, is that the website?
That's right.
Yeah. That's a great place to get to know the resources, the Ministry of World Relief, a great organization, and we're honored to spend a little time with the CEO and the president of World Relief, Stephen Bauman, joining us today, ordained minister, has degrees from Johns Hopkins, Wheaton College, University of Wisconsin, and has written a wonderful new book called Possible, A Blueprint for Changing How We Change the World. It's from Multnomah. Stephen, honored to talk with you today. We look forward to connecting here down the road.
Thank you, Neil, and greetings to all your listeners. What a fantastic hour we've had together, so God bless you.
WorldRelief.org is the website. Check it out. And if you missed a part of today's show, you can check out the podcast online at our website, myfaithradio.com.